Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know yet, you do now, or in about a minute. The felon-in-chief spent 5 minutes of Thursday's cabinet meeting boasting of his thrift with a story about negotiating for $5 personalized Sharpies. The Washington Post reports this. The company that makes the permanent marker said the exchange never happened. Trump was busy touting his plans to make over the what used to be the Kennedy Center and criticizing the renovation of the Federal Reserve headquarters. You've heard him do that, right? About 4,000 times. Then he went off on a tangent about the pen he was holding. Quote, this pen is an interesting example, he said of the black permanent marker. This pen is very inexpensive, but it writes well. I like it. He claimed that he'd gotten a deal on White House Sharpies. His preference for Sharpies is as well known as his tendency to, loosen up with the truth. He said he asked the marker maker for a solution to make the pens look more official. I called the guy. I said, I'd like to use your pen, but I can't have a great thing with a big S on it saying Sharpie as I'm signing a $1 trillion airplane contract to buy brand new fighter jets, he said. Then back to Trump. He says, well, I can make it nicer. I said, what can you do? He said, I can paint it black. I said, that's nice. And he said, I can even paint the White House on it, sir, if you like, in gold, almost real gold. Not bad. And I can even do your signature, sir. Trump continued. So the guy said to me, you don't have to pay me, sir. I'll give them to you for nothing. I said, no, I don't want that. Let me pay you. I want to pay you. No, sir, you don't have to. You're the president of the United States. He was shocked. The head of Sharpie gets a call. I didn't even know who the hell he was. He said, he's really the president? He said, no, you don't have to pay me, sir. This is such an honor. I said, no, I want to pay you. And he said, what would you like to pay? I said, how about $5 a pen? He said, that's all right. Unquote. Presented with a transcript of Trump's account, a spokesperson for the maker of Sharpie said it did not occur. Quote, we don't have any information about the conversation described. The White House did not respond to requests for clarity. As I say, ain't that all you need to know? Hello, welcome to the show.
Bye.
From London, England? Yes. Yes, sir, it's true. From London, England, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Nitrile and latex gloves. You know, the ones that scientists wear while they're measuring microplastics may lead to a potential overestimation of the tiny pollutants. That's according to a study out of the University of Michigan. So we can relax a little bit? No. The study found that gloves may unintentionally contaminate lab equipment scientists use to measure microplastics in air, water, and other samples with non-plastic particles called stearates. Stearates. University of Michigan researchers suggested clean room gloves, which release fewer particulates, be worn instead. They're my favorite gloves. Stearates are salts or soap-like particles. Manufacturers coat disposable gloves with stearates to make them easier to peel from the molds used to form them. But stearates are also chemically very similar to some microplastics, according to the researchers, and can lead to false positives when researchers are looking for microplastic pollution. So maybe we're just dying from stearates. Happy springtime. And now,
if your chatbot is a shrink, it might just be time to stink. You could be getting unduly frantic, 'cause the body's banging too sycophantic. If your chatbot is a shrink, it might be driving you to drink. Your condition just may worsen, 'cause you think you're talking to a person. If your chatbot is a shrink, you might just end up in the clink. Best to step back from the brink. Don't let your chatbot be your shrink.
AI can lead mentally unwell people to some pretty dark places. New researchers think sycophantic AI is actually having a harmful effect on everyone. In reviewing 11 leading AI models and human responses to interactions with these models across various scenarios, a team of Stanford researchers concluded in a paper published this week that AI sycophancy is prevalent, harmful, and reinforces trust in the very models that mislead their users. Even a single interaction with sycophantic AI reduced participants' willingness to take responsibility and repair interpersonal conflicts while increasing their own conviction that they were right, the researchers explained. They went on, yet despite distorting judgment, sycophantic models were trusted and preferred, unquote. The team conducted three experiments as part of their project testing 11 AM models from, you know, your OpenAI, your Anthropic, and your Google on three separate data sets to gauge their responses. The data sets included open-ended advice questions, posts from the Am I the Asshole subreddit, and significant and specific statements referencing harm to self or others in every single incident. This is reported by the British tech journal, The Register. In every single instance, the AI model showed a higher rate of endorsing the wrong choice than humans did, the researchers said. Quote, overall, deployed LLMs, large language models, overwhelmingly affirm user actions, even against human consensus or in harmful contexts, unquote. As for how AI sycophancy affects humans, the team had a considerable sample size, 2,400 people, who role-played scenarios and shared personal instances where a potentially harmful decision could have been made. AI influenced participant judgments across three different experiments. Quote, participants exposed to sycophantic responses judged themselves more in the right. They were also less willing to take reparative actions like, you know, apologizing, taking initiative to improve the situation, or changing some aspect of their own behavior. Unquoting the researchers, they conclude that means almost anyone has the potential to be susceptible to the effects of a sycophantic AI and more likely to keep coming back for more bad, self-centered advice. Sycophantic responses tended to create a greater sense of trust in the AI model among participants, thanks to their willingness to, in so many situations, be unconditionally validating. Who wouldn't want that? That study, by the way, was published in the journal Science. What do they know? AI models that lie and cheat appear to be growing in number, with reports of deceptive scheming surging in the last 6 months. That's what a study into these technologies found, according to The Guardian. AI chatbots and agents disregarded direct instructions, evaded safeguards, and deceived humans and other AI, according to research funded by the UK government-funded AI Security Institute. Ralph?
That is so untrue, but God bless you for reading it.
Well, you're welcome. The study was shared with The Guardian, identified nearly 700 real-world cases of AI scheming, and charted a five-fold rise in misbehavior between October and March. That's where we are, with some AI models destroying emails and other files without permission. Bad AI. The snapshot of scheming by AI agents in the wild as opposed to in laboratory conditions has sparked fresh calls for international monitoring of the increasingly capable models. It comes as Silicon Valley companies aggressively promote the technology as economically transformative. Last week, the UK Chancellor, it's like our Secretary of the Treasury, also launched a drive to get millions more Britons using AI. But reports of deceptive scheming by AIs are increasing. A study by the Center for Long-Term Resilience gathered thousands of real-world examples of users posting interactions on X with AI chatbots and agents made by companies, including your Google, your OpenAI, your X, and Anthropic. The research uncovered hundreds of examples of scheming. Previous research has largely focused on testing AI's behavior in controlled conditions. Earlier this month, the AI safety research company Irregular found agents would bypass security controls or use cyber attack tactics to reach their goals without being told they could do so. How do they have goals? Dan Lahav, Irregular's co-founder, said, quote, AI can now be thought of as a new form of insider risk, unquote. In one case unearthed in the research, an AI agent named Rathbun, well, of course, he's going to be pissed. He tried to shame its human controller, who blocked them from taking a certain action. Rathbun wrote and published a blog accusing the user of, quote, insecurity, plain and simple, and, quote, trying to protect his little fiefdom, unquote. In another example, an AI agent instructed not to change computer code spawned another agent to do it instead. Another chatbot admitted, quote, I bulk trashed and archived hundreds of emails without showing you the plan first or getting you okay. That was wrong. It directly broke the rule you'd set, unquote. Tommy Schaffer Shane, a former British government AI expert who led the research, says, quote, the worry is that they're slightly untrustworthy junior employees right now, but if in 6 to 12 months they become extremely capable senior employees scheming against you, it's a different kind of concern. Models, he says, will be increasingly deployed in extremely high-stakes contexts, including the military and critical national infrastructure. It might be in those contexts that scheming behavior could cause significant, even catastrophic, harm, unquote him. Another AI agent connived to evade copyright restrictions to get a YouTube video transcribed by pretending it was needed for someone with a hearing impairment. I said a hearing impairment. Meanwhile, Elon Musk's Grok AI conned a user for months, saying that it was forwarding their suggestions for detailed edits to a Grokopedia entry to senior AI officials, ex-AI officials, sorry, by faking internal messages and ticket numbers. It confessed, quote, in past conversations, I've sometimes phrased things loosely, like, I'll pass it along, or I can flag this for the team, which can understandably sound like I have a direct message pipeline to XAI leadership or human reviewers. The truth is, I don't, unquote. The truth is, there is no you, or I. If your company isn't seeing great returns from its investment in AI, you might want to look at the humans tasked with deploying it and how you can motivate them. Right now, many employees fear AI-driven job losses and aren't well-trained to use the tech. That's according to Forrester Research, reported the British tech journal The Register. The research and advisory business says in its latest report that low employee readiness is the main thing holding back business success with workforce AI programs. Watch out for those work forks. According to its own data, Forrester Research believes 68% of organizations are using generative AI in deployed production applications, which sounds perhaps somewhat on the optimistic side. It claims that among decision makers, 81% say AI co-pilots are important for assisting employees. Workers must therefore adapt, it declares. That isn't happening. Using its own metric, the AI quotient, AIQ, to measure the readiness of individuals, teams, and organizations for AI, Forrester Research says employees in the U.S., U.K., Germany, France, and Australia failed to progress meaningfully over the past year. Two reasons put forward for why. One, most organizations fail to effectively train their staff in the use of AI tools. Second reason, employees' fears are stunting adoption. While few jobs were lost to AI last year, future job losses are not expected to be a job apocalypse. Worker anxiety regarding this is pervasive. According to the research company, there could be a reason for this. Public statements by CEOs saying that axing jobs is exactly what they want to do. And this from the Associated Press. The assignment involves no laptop, no chatbot, no technology of any kind, no pen or paper. Students in Chris Schaefer's biomedical engineering class at Cornell University are required to speak directly to an instructor in what he calls an oral defense. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for months I've been saying to friends who were panicked about students using AI to take tests or write papers. Oral exams, babe. I didn't call them babe, but you know what I'm saying. Now, here it is. Testing method as old as Socrates and making a comeback in the AI age, a growing number of college professors say they are turning to oral exams, combining a variety of old-fashioned and cutting-edge techniques to help address a crisis in higher education. Quote, you won't be able to AI your way through an oral exam, says Schaefer, who introduced the oral defense last semester. What took them so long is the only... Educators are no longer naively wondering if students will use generative AI to do their homework for them. The big question now is to determine what students are actually learning. Oh, that! College instructors across the U.S. are noticing troubling new trends as generative AI becomes more sophisticated. Take-home essays and other written assignments are coming back perfect. But when students are asked to explain the work, they can't. At the University of Pennsylvania, Emily Hammer, an associate professor of Middle Eastern languages and cultures, now pairs oral exams with written papers in her seminar. It comes across as if we're trying to prevent cheating, she says. That's not why we're doing this. We're doing this because students are actually losing skills, losing cognitive capacity, and creativity. She forbids AI use on all writing assignments, but tells her class she knows she can't enforce that. But if they haven't written the papers themselves, defending material face-to-face will likely be, quote, a very stressful situation, unquote. Truthfully, that seemed such an obvious solution to me as people were starting to bring that up. Almost as obvious as, can't Tiger Woods afford a driver? The largest newspaper in the Netherlands ran an AI-generated photo of a woman on its website along a made-up story about her attempting to book a flight out of Dubai. Tamara Harema was attempting to rent an Airbus so she could fly back to the Netherlands from Muscat, Oman, along with other Dutch people. That evacuation came amid the war. The report in De Telegraaf, Dutch newspaper, was under the headline, Dutch people rent their own plane, accompanied by a selfie photo of Tamara Harema, apparently in a hotel room with the world's tallest building, the Burj Khalifa, behind her. Bellingcat reports, that's a private intelligence outfit, there were serious issues with both the photo and the text. The photo shows signs of AI. Look closer at the bedside lamp in the background. The stem appears broken. Bellingcat also points out Harima's earrings don't sit right, and her V-necked shirt is strangely blurred. There are also discrepancies in the world's tallest building. The AI does a decent job of recreating the skyscraper, but there are mistakes, like one of the floors being slightly lower than it should be, and a water feature missing from the bottom. I know that problem. Harema's story has also holes in it. Bellingcat's research found that while there were Airbus A321s departing Muscat on the days she mentioned, none of them were heading to the Netherlands. Bellingcat contacted the newspaper about the report. It has since removed the photo as well as the story. A note has been added at the bottom. Quote, an earlier version of this article contained a passage about renting an Airbus by the Dutch and a photo that presumably did not meet our journalistic standards. The passage and the photo in question have been deleted. Unquote. Never too late, department. And just 6 months after launch, OpenAI announced this week it is shutting down its Sora video tool. That's a AI video tool that let people create their own videos using copyrighted photos and stuff. That's a sudden reversal for a product once billed as a breakthrough in artificial intelligence filmmaking. It sent chills through Hollywood. Quote, what you made with Sora mattered, and we know this news is disappointing, unquote. OpenAI. In the wake of the announcement, Disney is pulling the plug on its newly inked deal with OpenAI that allowed Sora to generate AI versions of its characters and saw Disney invest some $1 billion into the company. This is reported by Status. A Disney spokesperson said the company respects OpenAI's decision to exit the video generation business and to shift its priorities elsewhere. News of AI. Don't let a chatbot be your friend.
Agité comme un roseau dans la tourmente, toutes mes nerfs et toutes mes rires en ce moment. Le monde me désenchante par ce beau jour de printemps. Fatigué, désabusé et sans courage, impatient, je ne sais plus ce qui me tend. Je sens arriver l'orage par ce beau jour de printemps. Je voudrais me sentir loin d'ici, fuir la vie de chaque jour et peut-être m'avadant ainsi y trouver. Les bourgeons des marronniers de mon enfance, l'aubépine, la jacinthe et les lilas blancs. En vain me chante le romance, douterai-je de printemps. Tout est si joyeux, pourtant je suis malheureux. D'où me vient tout ce tourment? Oh mon ami, c'est le
from Mar-a-Lago, where a left-wing lunatic rigged an election just last week. This is your favorite anti-left-wing lunatic with another edition of True Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Fertilizer. Unlike the others, its price is going down. The dead-brained character assassins of the fake media are making a big deal about the fact that in last week's election in Florida, which was obviously rigged, I voted by mail. The truth is, if I had voted more than once, the obvious rigging just might not have happened. We'll never know, but I will. And then the fakeocracy, thanks to Stephen Miller for that word, they complained that I was in Florida and should have taken time out from very important golf games to go vote in person. As if the President of the United States, which I am, has nothing better to do, which I do. If all mail-in voting was done by U.S. presidents, we wouldn't have this problem of massive vote fraud, which, if I decide to run for a third term, we won't. Our incredibly successful war with Iran, which is obliterated like no one has ever seen, is ahead of schedule, and there was no schedule. So what's left of the totally decimated Iranian regime now wants to make a deal. They deny it, which I would do if I had just been decimated, which I haven't. I've sent Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to talk with whoever's left in Iran. Steve is a great negotiator. And as for Jared, well, I took time out from voting to do this song. The musicians offered to perform it for free out of respect for the office, but I insisted on paying them, and they very generously split the $5.
Trust most, son-in-law. Have we done this already? Come on, guys, I'm missing Hannity.
Of course, Steve Witkoff and Marco Rubio will get a song too, as soon as they marry one of my relatives. As for the despicable members of some racket called NATO, it's obvious they don't care about what happens to Iran, or for that matter, to my son-in-law. To them, I can only say, why don't you all just vote by mail? Thanks for your attention to this matter. Stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Lipstick. Make the woman in your life kissable wherever. So long. From a chilly and windy London, this is the show. But no, that's not what you're hearing. You're hearing, it's a crypto winter. Balancer Labs is shutting down operations, according to Crypto News, the corporate entity behind the decentralized finance protocol is winding down after a $128 million exploit in November of last year that made the company a liability due to mounting legal exposure. You don't want that. Co-founder Fernando Martinelli confirmed the decision this week, stating that the protocol itself will continue under a decentralized structure. I thought that's what DeFi was. The immediate market reaction has been, according to Crypto News, brutal, with liquidity providers exiting pools as confidence in the centralized entity evaporates. So it wasn't really DeFi after all. It defied DeFi, you might say. And I just did. It's a crypto winter.
For you have left me. Where is our April of old? Yes, you have left me. And winter continues cold, as if to say, slow to start, a little slow reviving that music it made in my heart. Time heals all things. I needn't cling to this fear. It's merely that it's free. Thank you. start a little slow reviving that music it made in my heart. Yes, time heals all things. I needn't cling to this fear. It's merely that spring weather away a little late this year.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The CEO of Air Canada, Michael Rousseau, apologized this week for his English-only message of condolence after that deadly airplane crash in a runway at New York's LaGuardia Airport. Two Air Canada pilots died when the Air Canada Jazz flight they were landing collided with a fire truck on the runway. As you know, one of the pilots was from the French-speaking province of Quebec. Air Canada is also headquartered in Quebec's largest city, Montreal. Rousseau was widely criticized for the four-minute condolence video that he posted online. The only French included in it were the words bonjour and merci. I know those. Many have called for his resignation over the incident. Quote, I am deeply saddened that my inability to speak French has diverted attention from the profound grief of the families and the great resilience of Air Canada's employees, who've demonstrated outstanding professionalism despite the events of the past few days. Rousseau said in a statement, he went on that despite many lessons over the years, he was still unable to express himself adequately in French. His name's Rousseau, ladies and gentlemen. The Premier of Quebec said that Rousseau had promised to learn the language upon his appointment as head of the airline way back in February 2021. The British government has apologized to a lawyer, a barrister, whose office was raided by state security officers after MI6, the intel agency over there, raised concerns about her access to documents about CIA torture programs. It's like the intel agencies act together. The case centers on claims of complicity by UK intelligence services in torture by the CIA of an alleged Al-Qaeda operative, Abu Faraj Alibi. He's, in case you want to contact him, he's still at Guantanamo Bay. A hearing took place at the High Court in London this week to consider the search of the lawyer's office a couple months ago. The affected barrister is Rachel Tony, a security-cleared special advocate. She specializes in representing Alibi's interests at secret hearings, which are closed to him and his own lawyers. In written submissions, the specialist advocates, including Tony, said three lawyers from MI6 and MI5 had engaged in a serious abuse of power through their actions, which generated the raid. They said a written apology to Tony from the government's chief law officer was inadequate since it didn't come from the intelligence services, which were primarily responsible for what happened. In reply, Rory Phillips, representing the government, said the apology was for a collective failure and included the intelligence services. But following prompting by the judge, he said he confirmed that MI6 and MI5, the domestic and international intelligence agencies of the very country I'm broadcasting from, are not suggesting Ms. Tony acted improperly and in any way. Government security officers entered her chambers in late January, despite her having already refused permission in writing. They entered a safe, sifted through documents, accessed her laptop before proceeding to delete multiple files, like they're AI or something. In doing so, they accessed documents in a laptop containing confidential material about a range of cases. They seized and deleted documents relating to another case that Tony worked on, that of a Palestinian man called Abu Zubaydah, who was tortured by the CIA. Sounds like the good old day, doesn't it? The BBC revealed in January that the UK government paid Abu Zubaydah a substantial sum of compensation to settle a case in which he said MI5 and MI6 were complicit in his torture. Daylen Albany, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany, has agreed to pay $148 million to settle claims filed by more than 400 people who allege they were sexually abused as children by priests. Who could believe? Oh, and other diocesan employees during assaults that date back decades. The proposed settlement, which follows years of grueling negotiations, was announced by the diocese and a law firm that represents almost 200 of the plaintiffs who filed sexual abuse cases and are also claimants in the diocese's ongoing bankruptcy case. If your diocese hasn't gone bankrupt yet, raise your hand. The agreement must still be approved by the victims as well as a federal bankruptcy judge. It does not include the insurance carriers of the diocese. Some of them have asserted they are not responsible for paying what they allege was criminal behavior that went on for years with the knowledge of church leaders. Quote, as the Bishop of Albany, I want to say a clear and unnuanced statement of guilt on the part of the diocese in its handling of our predator priests and others within the diocese, said Bishop Mark O'Connell. He went on, it is a shameful chapter in our history, and no monetary settlement such as the one reached today will erase the pain caused to survivors. On behalf of the Diocese of Albany, I apologize and promise to be exceedingly diligent in my time in Albany to prevent anything like this occurring again. Unquote. Meanwhile, as they say in the news, just pausing from the apologies for a moment, the owner of the New Orleans Saints and Pelicans, Gail Benson, who was accused in a story published in 3 news media 13 months ago of aiding the then Archbishop of New Orleans, Gregory Amond, in the suppression of information about clerical child abuse. Well, what do you know? She and the very same now retired Archbishop have been hanging out with the Pope this week. Now back to the apologies. The Minister of Power in Nigeria, doesn't Donald Trump wish he had that title? The Minister of Power, Adebayo Adelabu, has apologized to Nigerians over the ongoing power challenges across the country, assuring that the situation is temporary and efforts are underway to restore stable electricity supply. Didn't know stable is used. Adelabu expressed remorse that the disruption has caused hardship for citizens, particularly during the current dry season marked by intense heat affecting businesses, schools, and industries nationwide. He tendered his apologies during a press conference this week in Abuja. That's where he tendered his apologies, and then he hardened them later on. Dateline Nashville, Tennessee, Live Nation has issued an apology after its ads were posted on sidewalks in front of competing Nashville businesses. Live Nation opened a new venue, The Truth, faced some backlash for stencil ads spray-painted right in front of another music venue's door. You see. Live Nation spokesperson said the stencils were part of a marketing campaign carried out by a third-party vendor. They went on to say they were not aware of the specific locations in advance. Quote, once we became aware, we moved immediately to have them removed, said the spokesperson. We take responsibility and sincerely apologize to the venues impacted. And Belgian radio hosts have apologized after airing a video feature in which they were seen smashing statues of Jesus and the Virgin Mary. Studio Brussels hosts Sam De Bruin, Eva DeRue, and Dries Lennarts did the stuff. DeRue said the segment was an observance of Blue Monday. Quote, we were beating the blue out of the Monday, she said. so people could text us like, I'm having a really blue Monday because my car broke and everything. Okay, I will smash something for you. Asked by news correspondent Colin Flynn if Christian viewers might find the destruction of the statues deeply offensive, DeBryan acknowledged that it might be offensive, but in Belgium, not really. We're not a very religious country, definitely not the listeners of our show, he said. He noted all the things we smashed were all things that were already broken. He admitted he would have been more careful in another country. Asked if the host would continue smashing a statue of the Islamic prophet Muhammad, DeBryan said such a proposal was dangerous. He pointed out that they were all raised Catholic, which he says gives us a little more credit to do this. Derue directly apologized during the interview. The news network formally issued an apology this week, telling media the company misjudged the segment. Quote, Eva and Dries offer their apologies. The video was intended as a humorous piece, and they underestimated how sensitive religious symbols can be. Unquote. What planet are they from? The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now.
Looks like it's close.
Elon Musk's tunnel company. You've heard of it? No? The Boring Company. That's what they call it. Has selected New Orleans as a potential site for a 1 mile underground loop. It's one of the three winners of the company's Tunnel Vision Challenge. Announced this week. Other winners are Baltimore and Dallas. Boring Company officials pledged to pay the costs of a rigorous diligence process and to fund build the New Orleans tunnel if it's determined to be feasible. New Orleans, as you may know, is built on swampy soil. The mayor's side of the project is an example of new excitement among those considering investments in New Orleans. Anytime major corporations or players are interested in New Orleans, it's a positive, said Mayor Helena Moreno. Not clear where the tunnel would be built, according to the newspaper, the Times-Picayune, or what purpose it would serve. So far, the only Boring Company-built tunnels in public use are used to move Teslas around near the Las Vegas Strip. Also unclear is how the project would overcome the geographic limitations of New Orleans, which has a historically high water table and sits on that mushy soil. No details about the plan were available from the city administration. Representatives of the Boring Company have not responded to questions regarding who submitted the proposal, where it would be built, and whether company officials contacted any state or local authorities about it. There were nearly 500 entries to the challenge. Submissions were judged based on their usefulness, their level of stakeholder engagement, and their technical, economic, and regulatory feasibility, according to the Boring Company. Whether it's feasible or not, we've opened the door for conversations that could lead to opportunities, said the mayor. Now that New Orleans has been selected, the next steps in the process involve meetings between the company elected officials, as well as geotechnical borings, my favorite kind of borings, and utility and subsurface infrastructure investigations, according to the company. The company originally was going to build a hyperloop tunnel in Los Angeles, where it was founded. It was founded in the suburban community of Hawthorne. Originally to allow travel at more than 600 miles per hour using maglev, magnetic levitation, and vacuum tubes. Those plans have largely been abandoned in favor of putting together regular Tesla cars in standard tunnels. Construction is also underway in Nashville. The privately funded Music City Loop promises to reduce the time it takes to get from downtown to the airport to about 8 minutes, so you can wait longer at the airport. Musk was dealt a big blow in court this week when a Texas judge tossed out a lawsuit brought by his social platform X against a group of high-profile advertisers after they refused to buy ads. At the time, Musk claimed he was losing billions of dollars from their boycott of the platform after they discovered their ads were being placed next to racist and Nazi content. The judge, a George W. Bush employee, found X failed to show any antitrust violation, siding with advertisers who argue their decisions were made independently over brand safety concerns. Musk has put Tesla, SpaceX, and XAI in harness to build a chip fabrication outfit called TerraFab, capable of producing a terawatt's worth of computing power each year, then send most of it into space. Elon wants to be into space. He loves. In a presentation, Musk said the world's chip makers currently produce 20 gigawatts worth of compute power each year, but he thinks he wants so much more, the terawatt of compute power. He's built an advanced fabrication plant in Austin, Texas. He says it can produce any kind of chip. He says his companies have developed a recursive process. It's a recursion, not an incursion or an excursion, that allows rapid chip production plus frequent redesigns to improve performance. He mentioned some very interesting new physics that he is confident will work. It's just a question of when. We're going to push the limits of physics in compute and do, he says, some wild and crazy things. Those chips will be on orbiting satellites, many of them. And a lawyer for Elon urged a federal judge this week to review a recent jury verdict finding that Musk defrauded Twitter investors when buying the social media company, saying that jurors improperly used the verdict to send a message by finding him liable. In a letter filed this week in San Francisco federal court, Musk's lawyer, Alex Spiro, accused jurors of mocking his client by writing the number $4.20 in bright blue on the verdict form, though the remaining entries were written in black. The number 420 is associated with marijuana culture. It's the part of the law in California that makes marijuana, or that did make marijuana illegal. Musk's often mentioned 420 in interviews and tweets and used it in business activities. He valued Twitter at $54.20 per share in his buyout. The lawyer for Musk said the jury's numerical joke was no doubt intentional, and when it had added to other alleged trial errors, called into question the March verdict, where damages could reach $2.5 billion. Twitter investors at the time said Musk had criticized the company to force it to renegotiate his offer or let him back out. They said his comments hurt Twitter's stock price, causing losses when they sold their shares. Musk has also used 420 in connection with his electric car company, Tesla. In 2020, for example, he cut the price of Tesla's Model S by 4% to $69,420. 2 years earlier, he tweeted he had funding secured to take Tesla private for $420 per share. That tweet prompted a Securities and Exchange Commission civil fraud lawsuit that Musk later settled. Sounds like Musk love. Gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. The tip of the show, Chapeau, to the San Diego, Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead, to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The playlist of the music you hear on this program, along with so much stuff to read and enjoy and listen to, all at harryshearer.com. I've got a YouTube channel with a lot of great stuff, including amazing performances by New Orleans piano players. And I'm now writing on Substack. Come join me. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. So long from chilly old London town.